Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. We're going to be talking today about an early trend. And as you all know, my goal here at Crush the Street is to cover trends early, profitably, and position myself as well as alert my readers as opportunities come up. And we're going to be doing that today and speaking to a very special guest, Dr. Roger McIntyre, CEO of Champignon Brands. Roger is a leader in alternative medicine, and he heads up the company Champignon, and it trades under ticker symbol SHRM on the CSE, and on the U.S. side is SHRMF. Roger, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
What a pleasure it is to be with you.
Roger, let's start off here. How did you get involved with alternative medicine? And just kind of give us a little bit of your background as what led you to what we're going to be talking today about, psychedelics, magic mushrooms, and what your company does.
Absolutely. I come at this slightly different when I look at other types of organizations in the area, and certainly my long history over 25 years working in drug discovery and development. I am a psychiatrist by training, also a pharmacologist, professor of psychiatry and pharmacology, not just in Toronto, but at State University of New York, University of California, and two schools in Asia. And for over 25 years now, I have been dedicated to providing care for people who have depression, as well as conditions that often affect people with depression, like post-traumatic stress and drug and alcohol misuse. And throughout that journey, that privileged journey, what it's really done for me is it's underscored two key unmet needs. The unmet needs for people who have these conditions. It's also underscored for me the unmet needs and how we should be developing treatments for people who have these conditions. And on the first point, what I decided to do a couple of years ago was set up Canada's first ever integrated center that would provide for patients, in that case, ketamine. And ketamine is a treatment we've had in medicine for a long time that's been recently repurposed to treat conditions like depression. And the FDA approval is there, and we give this at my center, which is part of Champignon currently. And this is a profitable, positive cash flow type of delivery platform. What we also wanted to do is we wanted to also, as I said with the second piece, develop treatments for people with depression-related conditions that really, in fact, was informed by some of the ways that were other drugs have been developed in ways that we could improve upon. So what I mean by that is that, and this is where some of the detail does matter for people who are joining us for this program. You see, when you develop a product, people often say to me, okay, what is the asset that you claim is effective? That's not the question. The question is, what is the asset and who's developing it for you? What every single pharmaceutical company in the world and everyone in this area of psychedelics is going to say is we have to outsource this to a clinical research organization. So at Champignon, we decided to take that out, the intermediary out. This is where people have to understand how this works. This is looking under the hood, because that's where the inefficiencies are. That's where the lack of the additional resources are. But also, that's where we lose quality in terms of having a successful outcome. Remember, R&D is either you win or you lose. And in order to increase the chances of winning, you have, in fact, to be shepherding this yourself. So we're the only organization that I've ever heard of that not only has clinics, like we have our clinic in Toronto, we have our clinic in California, we're expanding to up to 7 clinics this year, but we also, in fact, have our ability to produce our own ketamine and related derivatives, psychedelics and related derivatives on our own IP platforms. And this is so different insofar as we have the patients, we have the research infrastructure, and we believe that together makes us very, very different. So I come at this as an advocate of people who have these conditions or these conditions. I come at this as an academic who spent over 20 years here, and throughout that time, I've been able to create the biggest research footprint in the world in depression. And I thought the time was right to do this the right way, to give patients what they need, and also to provide the public with a very novel, really, opportunity to treat these conditions, all the while doing it in an R&D way that would be rewarding to patients, but also be rewarding to our company and our investors.
Absolutely. Roger, tell us a little bit about psychedelics, maybe the background of the, you know, what it's seen throughout the years, the development, and, you know, why investors should be paying attention to psychedelics in 2020.
You know, you'd be hard pressed to find a narrative that's been so really varied and so up and down in the story of psychedelics. I think many listeners would know that psychedelics were used thousands of years ago. It was described in some of the anthropology books. Where the sort of more contemporary history begins is in the really in the early 30s and 40s. Just to be clear, LSD was well-known drug. It was identified back in 1928. In psilocybin, which is which is better known as mushrooms, in fact, was discovered in the late 1950s. These drugs very quickly became identified as drugs that were potentially helpful for a variety of psychiatric conditions. For a variety of reasons, these drugs became part of counterculture, hippie culture, party culture, this type of thing. And that led to very significant laws that were put in place around the world, basically making them highly illegal in really so-called Schedule I drugs, which basically means they're highly illegal. You shouldn't have them. It's illegal to be in possession of them. And what that did was that halted the scientific progress. I think what's happened in the last decade is you've seen recognition around the world that mental illnesses like depression, opioid addiction, alcohol addiction, post-traumatic stress, these are common conditions affecting humanity. Secondly, what you're seeing is neuroscience. The neuroscience has just taken off. Like the neuroscience around how we understand how the brain works, how we understand what's causing some of these mental illnesses is just surreal, just exponential growth in our knowledge about what's causing this. And what really sort of really came out of that research was really an interesting opportunity. Some of the underlying problems in the brain were problems in the brain that suggested maybe psychedelics could help it. And then that led to some very rigorous studies being done under government watch in the United States, showing that some psychedelic formulations could correct the problems, leading to a decrease in depression and decrease in drug and alcohol, decrease in PTSD. I think the zinger, frankly, was a couple of years ago when the FDA announced in the United States that psychedelics were breakthrough. They were going to fast track the development of these drugs. That was really a statement about the political change. There's a regulatory pathway forward for an approval. And I think it speaks to a broader social, cultural, and political shift. I think we have to take a history as lessons approach. And what I mean by that is that we at Champignon do not see the development of psychedelics for recreational usage. I think this was done in the cannabis area quite a bit, probably to its peril. I think we need to be very clear, and that is that everything has side effects. Placebo causes side effects. Everything causes side effects. So what you have to do to be responsible is you need to develop medicines for the right patient population or the right group. And we have dedicated only to study this for medical purpose under good medical practice, FDA type guideline to develop these products in that area. And the FDA has been very, very clear that towards better treatments in psychiatry, there needs to be an approach that values the quality. Quality means only those centers who've done this kind of work, that is, have done high impact research, should be doing this. And also what comes out of that really is, unless you need it, you should not be using clinical research organizations or outsourcing to keep the quality within. And that's what we're trying to do. So I think, in fact, that the political changes have been vast. I do think, though, that if there is a push for recreational psilocybin, et cetera, I think you might see some backlash there. But in the medical area, I think there's really been an openness to really considering some of these very new approaches.
Well, I think a lot of people are associating what we're seeing now with magic mushrooms to what we saw with cannabis. So it almost seemed like, oh, well, there's this endorsement of it. And so we're likely to go down the same road as the cannabis trajectory. But before, maybe you can respond to that too, but you alluded to magic mushrooms being a Schedule I drug. And I think many people will find it quite the conundrum that you have this Schedule I drug that can also be used to mitigate substance abuse. So, I mean, maybe just talk about that. And I think, again, that comes to education. People need to understand what this can be used for, despite, you know, decades of, you know, illegal branding of this product.
Absolutely. So just to be clear on that, so what Schedule 1 means is that the government has decided that there's no benefit of the treatment and there's only potentially harm. And Schedule 1 includes a variety of drugs like heroin and crack cocaine and so on, things that we would agree on that clearly have not been beneficial and in fact have caused harm. Now, the reason why ketamine appeared there was really an attempt to provide regulation. To be very clear, ketamine, for example, has been on the list of the World Health Organization's list of essential medicines. It's one of the most frequently used drugs in medicine for anesthesia and pain. So the government is saying is, for recreational purpose, it has no application, but under medical supervision, it has appropriate utility, in that case, pain or in anesthesia, now in depression. I envisage a pathway forward where you're going to see something similar for psychedelics, assuming that they are successful. So at our center, we're going to take psychedelic, we're going to produce it in-house on our own IP platforms, test it on our own patients, and take the drug to what's called phase two. Just so everyone's on the same page, phase one means we give it to healthy volunteers to make sure it's safe. Phase two means we give it to patients who have, for example, depression, to indeed show that it's safe, but also show that it has some efficacy, that it works, versus a placebo. And then if and when it's successful there, we're going to be partnering with our many large pharmaceutical companies who will then, in fact, be working with us to take it forward, that is to take it forward to phase three and FDA approval. So what we envisage is these products, although they are all on the same category as Schedule 1, they are products that can be used medically, and I can see psychedelics as retaining their level 1 status, and if and when they're shown to be effective, they will only be available at specialized clinics, certified clinics that are accredited under very strict supervision and surveillance. I can't imagine anything different. So that's how we can take a drug that is Schedule 1, develop it for medical purpose, and then give it for medical purpose. The Schedule 1 often refers to the more recreational use of the product.
Roger, talk to us about, you know, how far science is down the rabbit hole of health and of mental, you know, the brain. I mean, how much of a void is there in this health and wellness, mental health phase? You know, and I guess, you know, that's where the void is for psychedelics. But is there, I guess the question is there a need for psychedelics, or are there other opportunities out there that psychedelics is just competing with?
You know, it's such a great question. And there's a concept in medicine called the epidemiologic transition. What does it even mean, the epidemiologic transition? 100 years ago, the most common reason human beings died was because of infection. Our lifespan was actually only 100 years ago, back in 1910, our lifespan was 52. So infection, that's what killed people back in the day. Then we developed vaccines and antibiotics. And then that led to what's called the second epidemiologic transition. In other words, what kills people today is chronic disease, depression, drug abuse, obesity, heart disease, diabetes. And within that world of chronic non-communicable diseases, chronic diseases of humanity, depression is the most common, has the earliest age at onset, and is the most poorly treated. The existing treatments have just not delivered. So we know that the majority of people with depression, substance abuse, alcohol abuse, PTSD, majority, over 75%, are in fact not getting better with existing treatments. With ketamine at my center, we get people better 65% of the time. That compares to maybe 10 to 20% of patients with the existing therapies. And they get better faster and they get back to work, which is in fact what people love. On the issue with respect to, you know, the unmet need, I mean, that itself makes it very clear. But I think what also makes it very clear is the spend. I mean, over $12 to $15 billion a year is spent on antidepressant or related products in the United States. speaking to the problem, speaking to the how common these these concerns are, but also speaks to the opportunity. In other words, if we can identify genuinely novel, genuinely unique treatments that can really change the game for people, can really make their lives better, make them function better, and can take them off of these very dangerous drugs like opioids and so on, that would obviously have tremendous societal benefit. But the payers, public and private, are aware of this and are willing to pay premium price for those types of novel treatments. This is why the FDA has declared ketamine and psychedelics as breakthrough, because they are truly something novel. The FDA has never been accused of using superlatives. So when they say breakthrough, it's pretty significant. And this is the first time in 7 decades we've had this type of avenue. It was made possible, frankly, by the advances in technology. We just didn't have the ability to look at the brain the way we can now versus 10, 20 years ago, ways that are surreal. And that has provided for us a line of sight for developing these products.
So talking about that line of sight and dominoes falling for momentum in this space, I mean, what are you seeing in terms of companies, big companies, doing to position themselves, maybe the bigger money starting to invest in this space, that really gives you the confidence or the foresight to say, hey, this is where psychedelics are going in 5, 10, 20 years?
Absolutely. And, if you build it, they will come. That seems to be the motto, not just for baseball and everything else in life, but also seems to be the motto for psychedelic. And I think what's relevant is that we have to take a history as lessons approach, as I said earlier. In other words, there were lessons learned from the cannabis situation, but there's been lessons learned from how Prozac was developed, and everyone knows Prozac. In other words, we know how to do this the right way. And what you're going to see is you're going to see, in fact, more people in this area. There's a lot of enthusiasm and exuberance in the area. But you're also going to see rubber hitting the road. In other words, you're going to see, in fact, the need for a thing called results. In other words, what are the milestones? Are they being achieved? Are you getting signal? And the best way to get signal is, in fact, to have quality on stewarding the drug development. Again, this is why it's so critical to look under the hood here a little bit on how drugs are developed. We have decided we're not going to outsource that. We're going to insource that. We believe strongly that the insourcing of our drug development is no different than identifying a young talent in sport and following it through its maturity to getting to the main team. You would never outsource that. You'd keep that internally. And this metaphor is apt, and this is where things go wrong. And all the while, what we're doing as we're increasing our scale, you see at Champignon, we're doing two things. We are giving ketamine currently at our clinic in Toronto and California. By the way, we're expanding, as I talked about, and that's a profitable, scalable, multiple type of business model. And then we have the R&D taking place in our own centers on our own patients with our own human capital, our own people who've been leading the research on this. And then we think, in fact, what's going to happen after 1 to 2 years, which, by the way, is our timeline, which is much shorter because we're not outsourcing it, you're going to start seeing a differentiation. You're going to see a differentiation. And the differentiation is going to be clear. And I think you're going to see that the larger funders, large pharma, who's very interested in this area, by the way, will be, in fact, partnering with those who have the results. This is what J&J did with their S-ketamine spray, the intranasal spray. That product was developed at NIH and Yale. That product was moved along to a certain degree. And then when the opportunity presented itself, that is, there was a reason to believe, J&J came in and worked with the group at Yale and so on, and the rest is history, as they say. And that model is what we're going to be doing insofar as we're going to be taking the product to phase two. So yeah, lots of activity. It's an unmet need area. The rubber's going to hit the road, there's no question. And I've seen this in over 2 decades of doing this kind of research. So I don't think that the history will be anything other than informative as to how this is going to turn out.
Roger, you've alluded to this, but speak to the business model of the company, maybe the revenue sources, competitive advantages, and even the current assets, and maybe with the follow-up of where the company is now to where it's going.
Yeah, I think this is really important for people to be aware of where we are different from what's there. Champignon is, and this is why I took over as CEO of Champignon, because it really represented for me the formula that really was a successful formula. The first is we have clinics. We have clinics that give ketamine, FDA-approved treatment, intravenous, intranasally. We give it for depression, high volume. Between our two clinics in Toronto and California, we're talking about over 5,000 infusions in the last 2.5 years between the two centers. We're growing now to 7 centers approximately before Christmas of this year, 2020, and then next year, 20 more clinics. So that is a business model in and of itself. But for us, that is really not just a business model in of itself, it's also the opportunity. And I've always believed that to get this right, we have to know our patients right. And those are the patients who come into our own clinical trials. So Champignon doesn't just have clinics, which nobody else has. What we have is we have our own IP sourcing and supply chain. We develop our own ketamine derivatives. We have our own in-house ability to do that, as well as psychedelic derivatives, as well as the platforms for delivery. So we have the clinics, we have the IP, we have the actual asset, and we have the delivery method that we can actually implement on our own people coming into our own program. So this is not just, this is unique in itself, no one has something like that, but it also, in fact, this is where the intangible is. It gives us that value proposition, because we can actually select the quality patients for our studies, and the human capital that we have working for us has been the top people in the world, as evidenced by our positioning as the top research impact center in depression. So the business model in the short term is going to be with our ketamine delivery, and we're going to scale with that in multiples. And then all the while, we're going to be developing our own ketamine and psychedelic derivatives with a view that we're going to partner with a larger pharmaceutical company who will work with us at the phase to take it forward. And that'll be a very highly rewarding venture once we get to that position. So it's a very, very, very different organization than anything I've ever heard of in my career, where the big companies who develop the more familiar drugs of the Prozac era of drugs, but also in this new area of ketamine and psychedelics. I've never heard anything like this. So this is why I really, really am confident in our success.
Well, and what a time to be doing this. We had roughly 40 million people lose their job over the last couple months. I think there's going to be a lot of people in that depressive state looking for solutions. So maybe closing here, just speak to that a little bit, kind of, you know, where we are as a society and, you know, obviously the need for new solutions. And then, of course, give people a place to go if they want to learn more about the company, more about you, and more about ways to partner with Champignon.
I'm so glad you raised that point. You made a really important point of the time that we're in. You know, we didn't need the global pandemic of COVID-19 to create a business model for us. Unfortunately, mental illness is not well served, and mental illness and drug and alcohol addiction is so common globally. The need was always there. It's a terrible unmet need. And the existing treatments have really been underwhelming, unfortunately, for too many people. This situation has only amplified this, as you alluded to, not just with depression and post-traumatic stress, but also drug and alcohol misuse, all of which are going up in different parts of the world, along with suicide. And so, yes, the time could not be better for us, in fact, be coming out with something genuinely novel. And we are especially feeling an opportunity here to make a real purposeful impact in the era that you alluded to, so-called deaths of despair, people keep dying by suicide because of misery and opioid misuse and alcohol misuse. We expect that to go up. So our timing is perfect. For people who want to learn more about us, they go to Champignon Brands, our website, or they can even, in fact, if any questions or queries, just email me directly at roger@champignonbrands.com.
Roger, thanks so much for coming on the show with me today and just really educating us on where we are and where things are headed in the form of alternative medicine.
What a pleasure. Thanks for having me today.